The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
And new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count Bisping.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. It is another episode of Believe You Me with myself and Luis J. Gomez. Luis, looking fresh, looking happy, looking healthy. How are you, bud?
I'm in a good mood right now, today, New York City, the first day ever, phase one reopening.
Bro, old news. I told you this weeks ago, I'm in Laguna Beach, tripping the light, fantastic, ordering hors d'oeuvres, having cocktails, throwing caution to the wind. You know what I mean? All over the world, people are reveling, getting together in big groups, Luis. I don't know if you've seen the thousands of people having some kind of food orgy on the news, it looks like, but people are getting together.
That's
buddy.
A protest, Bisping. Jesus Christ.
I just thought they were so excited about the like food out, we're at the house, fucking let's go crazy. Sorry, not making light of the protest. It's a comedy podcast.
Come on now. So no, well, here's the thing. New York is not open like you are open, okay? New York phase one, all that means is that certain businesses, certain non-essential businesses like Gas Digital Studios are able to open with many, many restrictions in place. Phase two in 2 weeks. Now restaurants, 25% capacity.
It's great, by the way, because it is nice to be back in the restaurant. Somebody on the YouTube comment the other day was like, oh, you know, a lot of people can't even afford to go to restaurants. I'm like, okay, well, that
better.
Well, you know, that's unfortunate, but it doesn't mean I have to feel guilty for saying I went to a fucking restaurant.
Let me answer that, though, because that's very interesting. People will say that. It's like, so are we not supposed to talk about the things that we have going on in our lives? It's not like we're sitting here fucking showing off our fucking $300 sneakers and Ferraris. We're talking about going to a restaurant with our family. It's not like we're even saying we're going to a crazy, like, Nobu $800 meal. We're talking about getting a fucking burger. I think it's sort of...
I ordered a burger off the kids' menu because it's cheaper, okay? All right? That's what I do because I'm like, which restaurant has the biggest kids' meal? Boom, that's where I go. So, you know, times are hard over here.
Yeah.
Quarter mansion is soon going to be a half mansion is soon going to be a quarter mansion, Luis.
But also, I mean, look, you know, both you and I came from somewhat humble beginnings. I think some people listen to this show. I know some people listen to this show and they go, oh, shit, I'm inspired by the shit that you guys talk about. You know, you guys, maybe they came from a upbringing like you, Bisping, and fucking whatever. And they watch you become a UFC champion through sheer will and determination. I mean, that's a fucking crazy story. So, yeah, it's every once in a while, if you go to a nice restaurant, we can brag about it a little bit. Maybe it's inspiring somebody to be better. Maybe we are actually helping the universe and inspiring people to do better and be better. And if you can't afford to go to a nice meal, just fucking, I don't know.
Maybe though, Luis, on the flip side, some people have a real eating disorder and they're trying to stay away from restaurants and we're leading them to temptation. You ever thought about that? You know, it's funny you mentioned things are reopening. I shouldn't say this. At the weekend, we had the big fights. I was sitting there, watching all the build up to it all. I'm watching the prelims, some good fights on there as usual. And there's an excellent main card, but sometimes tensions flare. There was a stupid little argument in the house. I said, you know what? Wow. Everything's open to 25%. I'm going to take a walk.
So I went you go to a bar or a restaurant in Cali at 25% right now.
Dude, the one place by my house, Tempo, which is fucking awesome, by the way, was packed. Absolutely packed. But first of all, I went down to BJ's because Megan, who lives with us, she works at BJ's now, right? So I'm like, okay, I know it's 25% malarkey, but Megan works there, so I'll get in for sure. And I only want to sit at the bar and have a beer until I calm down. We've had a stupid argument. It was probably all my fault. I'm a meathead, you know what I mean? So I'm like, fuck this.
Can you say what it was about at all or no?
What was it about? No, it was about ordering dinner. It's about ordering what takeout. And they were going on at me and I'm just like, listen, because I had a little nappy poo-poo, right? I woke up from a nap and I'm having a coffee and I'm just waiting for the caffeine to kick in. Do you know what I mean? And they were going on and on and on. I went, listen, I was being a little miserable bastard. I'm like, hey, I'm just waking up. Just give me 5 minutes. Give me 5 minutes. And then they were like, the bitchiness started, you know, and then I, you know, erupted like a fucking volcano, majorly overreacted.
Well,
as I
in
always
your mind,
do.
You're asking for 5 minutes, and that
just
is
give
reasonable.
Me 5 minutes. It's That's not a lot. Reasonable. It's literally 5 minutes. It's not a long time.
Now, from their perspective, they've been trying to order dinner for an hour.
They're starving.
They're fucking so hungry. You're just, you know, living in your little life. Like, oh, you had a nap. None of us had a fucking nap today. It's nice that you got to have a nap. We're starving. You have the credit card. Please let us eat.
No. They've all got credit cards. They've got access. I'm not that bad, Lewis. I don't keep hold of the coffers. Oh, I don't control everything. And I'm like, okay, perhaps I'll let you eat. Perhaps I'll let you won't. Give me a foot massage. No, that's not how I operate. But no, yeah, listen. Yeah, stupid little arguments. It happens in married life all the time. So I said, I'm getting out of the house for a minute. I thought I'd go get a beer. I went down to BJ's and I walked in. I said, yeah, I'm just going to sit at the bar and have a beer. Yeah, I'm sorry, sir. There's going to be a 35-minute wait. I'm like, a 35-minute wait. I don't want a table. I don't want food. I'm going to sit at the table by myself.
Yeah, I said, Megan?
Yeah, they said, no, there's a 35-minute wait. And then I'm like, is Megan working? And he's like, no. And I'm like, oh, because she lives at my
stealing.
House.
Megan was caught stealing last night. She is fired.
Listen, I know she's working because she lives in my house, dipshit. Go and get fucking Megan. She's the hostess. She will sit me at the bar. And anyway, I stormed off. I didn't even have the beer and went back to the house. So anyway, there you go. That's me and my. That's how I get. When you do the same, when you lose your temper, you cut your nose off to spite your face all the time.
Of course. It's so funny because it's the justification, though, because once again, you are so justified from your perspective in being angry because you're going, I'm just asking for 5 minutes. And that's the same problem with me. We have a similar thing where I don't think we can look from the other person's perspective in that moment. And then if you fucking step on the gas with me there.
Whoa. What about my perspective? How about they look at my perspective? They haven't just come woken up from a deep sleep. Apparently, by all accounts, I was even snoring and I never snore. That was a deep sleep. It was needed. I was tired. I've been working so hard to provide for this house. My body just shut down midday. You know what I mean? Did he take that into consideration? No. Take, feed me, Michael. Feed me. I'm like, okay, give me 5 minutes. But no, it was too much to ask.
So that's it. And then you ended up getting into a fight and that was your
night. Put them all in hospital, to be quite frank. They're just getting out today, I think, you know. It's just bish, bash, bosh. I'm like, I still got this shit.
It's pretty quiet in the house, I'm noticing. What happened to your family?
Yeah. No, just a little joke there, by the way. People think I'm joking about domestic violence. It is a joke. So there you go. So your weekend was good then, Lewis, was it?
It was good. We drove out of the city and I went upstate, or I shouldn't say upstate. I went to Connecticut to go to a restaurant, had a burger, had a beer. It was just fucking great to feel normal again. And then I got invited to do a stand-up comedy show for the first time in 3 months because it was like 20 minutes away from the restaurant. We were in Stamford, Connecticut. And I forgot all my jokes. I literally don't remember any of my material at all.
Oh, no way. So you were like a rookie again. Did you get all nervous or did you just roll with the punches?
No, I just did crowd work. I just talked shit to the crowd. It was a weird show. So, you know.
I know your material. I can round off a few of your jokes. All right. So I went down to Mexico. Hey, everyone, you want to know how to get free cocaine? You want to know how to get free cocaine?
Of course you heard this one.
You go down to the beach and you just hang around in Mexico. And a minute later, someone will come up to you. They go, hey. You want free cocaine? You want to buy some cocaine? You go, here, let me try. So you try a little bit. And they say, no, I'm good. Then you walk 20 yards down the beach and you stand there and guaranteed, like clockwork, another dude will come up and say, hey, you want to buy cocaine? And you try a little bit of that cocaine. And then you go down the yards, down the beach, another 20 yards, and another guy will come up to you. Anyway, 6 hours later, I was in Argentina or something like that, right?
That's pretty good. It's a better version of my joke. I should tell him that way. It's shorter. It's more concise.
Just to the
that
point.
Was a fucking 10-minute story for no reason that I told.
Yeah, I did it in 30 seconds. Butchered it completely. Brian Harrington, are you with us, guys? Brian, how was your weekend, my friend?
It was actually a little eventful.
There he is. Good to see you. Eventful. Go ahead.
Yeah. Brian, you look better, by the way. I don't know what's going on today. Usually you're in what looks like to be a dark heroin den. Like there's like cigarette smoke and it's just dark. And look, you got a joint in your hand. You're in the lighting's a little bit better. You look clean.
Yeah, I cleaned my windows.
Good.
So,
turns out that there was a home invasion in the house next door to mine, and dude got shot dead.
What?
Whoa, man. Hold on. Say that again. And maybe a little more detail. Maybe break it down. Are you serious?
Yeah, I have no idea what happened. I was editing some shit, and I look out my window, and the whole world is blue and red. So I go outside and check it out. Whole block is covered in cops. There's a dude laying out on the lawn, bleeding out.
And, did you actually see him on the lawn?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Did you know the guy?
Peripherally, he's like a – there's a less than legal apartment. And he was living there, and it's like he's only.
Oh,
been
so
there
you were like, you're like, all right, get the riffraff out of the neighborhood. You
hold on,
okay
hold on, hold on, hold on, just real fast before we get into the details or the deets or what you know, and then we'll just make light of the dead guy, which we're not going to do. That's a joke again. What do you mean a less than legal apartment? Explain that.
I mean, we've had building inspectors show up to my house looking for the illegal apartment in their house.
Oh, I see, I see. Okay, okay. So they're like kind of subleasing or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it, got it. Fuck, man. So you heard, did you hear a gunshot or you just heard the police?
I didn't. I was editing. I had cans on. I was completely out of the world.
Man, that's awful. So your next door neighbor. And then, so you say you didn't know him that well, but what do you know? So what happened? Was it a robbery? You say a home invasion, right?
Yeah. The police report says it's a home invasion. I don't know whether or not it was a personal thing or whether or not it was just from the excess of people in the neighborhood.
So there was protests going on?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying they were related.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. I mean, man, Jesus Christ, I don't even know what to say. I don't want to make light of that. You know what I mean? Way to bring the mood down, Brian, first of all. Thanks for that,
buddy. Jesus Christ,
my bad.
You know, Jesus Christ, how dare you live next door to somebody that got murdered and then mention it on the podcast when I ask you how you're doing?
Yeah, seriously, Brian, it's not like we completely knew that happened before we started the podcast and set you up for this story.
It's not like we did that whatsoever.
Oh, man, you guys are making me feel bad. I'm going to leave.
I mean, shit, look, man. Hold on. So that could have... Go on, Lewis.
I was going to say, like, you know, look, we can make fun of this guy's death. I mean, you know, what do you want me to say here? You know, is everything sacred now? Some guy dies. We can't be like, oh, fucking, you know.
Hold on. Brian, did he have a family? Does he have wife and kids? Or was he some loser?
No, I think he was there by himself. And
by the way, I'm not inferring that you're a loser if you don't have a wife and kids. Sorry, everybody.
What is going on with you?
There.
Stop apologizing for every joke you're making.
No, because you know what these fucking little fairies are like these days. I don't have a wife and kids. Does that mean I'm a loser? Yes. Yes. You're a fucking loser. Sorry, Brian, go on.
I shouldn't say that. You're a loser if you are not getting any vagina. After a certain age, like I'm 38 years old. I don't have a wife. I have a kid. But, you know, it's a broken home. So, yes, I'm a loser. But, yeah, I just think that we, you know, fine. We can make fun of people. We can make fun of things. It's a comedy podcast.
I know a lot of decent people. Very good, successful people, but they're just not, you know, they haven't met the right person. They haven't got children because they're responsible. They use a condom. You know what I mean? That doesn't make you a loser. That's why I backtracked a little bit on my statement. But still, Brian, how much of a loser was this dead guy?
Hey, man, I don't know. He could have been fucking a heroin dealer for all I know. You know, like I literally have no idea about his life. So
that's crazy.
But how weird, how bizarre was it? Was it?
Oh,
I remember when I was a kid, my neighbor got, I don't even know how he died, but my next door neighbor, middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning, we just saw the blue and red like going through the windows, and we came outside and they were just pulling his body out in a body bag. And this is, I was maybe 7 or 8 years old. It was the first time I had ever seen a dead body. I'd never been to a funeral even. I was too young when my dad died to go to his funeral. So I had never even seen that. And I remember how eerie and creepy it felt just sort of seeing this dead body. This guy was bleeding out on the front lawn. He was alive at the time.
And yeah, they were trying to keep him calm. Like, they were trying to, like, they were giving him the whole, you know, you're going to be all right. It's not that bad. So I'm pretty sure that dude was on his way.
So I was, as you, for some reason, I mean, yeah, I guess you live in the Big Apple, so you guys are used to seeing this thing, type of phenomenon, dead bodies, people getting shot. Lewis is like, oh, yeah, I remember the first time that happened to me. And then Brian's like, yeah. So I'm like, I'm racking my brains trying to think of a comparable story. And I'm like, a dead body? Have I ever seen a dead body? And I'm like, the only dead body I saw was when a guy died and I heroically brought him back to life. I saved the guy's life. Sullivan Stapleton, very famous actor. Did either of you guys happen to bring the corpse back to life? Did you?
I tried. I pounded on his chest. I was like, wake up. No.
Did you really?
The cops are shooting you for being outside.
What were you saying, Ben?
So the cops are shooting people for being outside. I wasn't about to go into a dog pile of them to try to save this guy's life.
Yeah. Oh, it was shit, over. Man. That's Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? I mean, I know nothing about the situation, but one would imagine that it was probably targeted, probably a robbery or maybe some personal thing. You know, you got to have bad luck for that just to be random. But Brian, if it was random, that could have easily been your house. We could have a dead Brian in our hands. The reality is that Harrington would be producing the show right now. That's truly terrifying.
And then it wouldn't be out till Friday.
Yeah, and everything would be fucked.
Imagine Harrington got killed. I'm not making light of it or anything, but I'm just saying it would definitely increase the quality of the show. That's a fact. It sounds shitty, and people are getting Harrington's back lately. Have you seen that? Bisping in the comments.
Oh, like, big time.
Bullying Harrington. Fucking losers. Shut up. Stop getting Harrington's fucking back. Harrington's lucky to be here. You know how many times Harrington fucks up and we still allow him to be a part of this?
Hey, listen, I don't want to turn this into a bash Harrington episode, you know, but I'm just saying that's crazy, man. Dead people getting killed in the streets. I mean, well, it's been happening recently. It always happens. But still, when it's someone you know or someone you know experienced it, it just seems closer to home for some reason. But that's a shame. I'm sorry to hear that, Brian.
Have you ever seen somebody shot, Bisping?
No. I live in a civilized society. I haven't seen somebody get shot.
Okay,
I don't live
on
the set
show
of an action fucking movie, okay? No, that doesn't make me less of a person. Doesn't make me less of a tough guy. Oh, bro, you don't know shit. You ain't seen anyone got shot? Sit the fuck down. No, I'm happy. I'm proud to say I've never seen anybody get shot. Why have you?
I've never seen anybody get shot. I've definitely heard gunshots. Yeah, Shannon just told a story recently on the other podcast about how she watched a guy get shot at a fucking club she was working at, like a bar. Like, he got shot and had to, like, you know, the cops and the ambulance had to come. So it does happen. I mean, I really get queasy with blood. I don't know how much of a help I would be.
Yeah, well, the only dead body as I saw, it was an actor friend of mine, Sullivan Stapleton. I think I've told this story in Thailand. He fell off the back of a tuk-tuk, cracked his head wide up. This story is super short. If I told you the full story, there's some funny parts at the beginning. All right, this bit's funny as fuck, so I'll say it. We go into a nightclub. I don't know why I did this. I've never done this before in my life. You could argue that this is all my fault, but it wasn't. We're in a nightclub. We're already drunk when we get there. And he's, you know, he likes a good time. We're at a table. He's ordering bottles of whiskey, bottles of vodka. At one point, I remember people just pouring it straight from the bottle down the necks. Everyone was fucking hammered. Anyway, we're near the front of the club, and it was all a haze. You know when it gets to that, it's like you don't really know what's going on. You're hammered. You've checked out. And there's a guy. We're talking to a guy. He's like a kind of buff dude. He's well-dressed. He's got a shirt and tie on and a suit and stuff. But he's a charming guy. Obviously, Sullivan Stapleton, pretty good, you know, well-known guy, and I'm a well-known dude. So he's chatting away to us, and he just had this beautiful, luscious beard. And I don't know what got into
it. How would you describe it?
A beautiful, luscious beard. It was okay. A beard so full, I was just mesmerized.
I just wanted to make sure I heard it correctly. It was a beautiful, luscious beard.
Luscious beard. It was sensual. It was exotic. It was erotic. And it was so sensual that I don't know why I did this. I swear to God, I don't know why I did this.
You're
hammered. I grabbed his head and I went... And I licked the side of his face.
No, you
I don't
didn't.
Know why I did it.
Why are you telling the story? You should go to death.
listen. I licked the side of his face. But turns out the guy owns the nightclub, right? And he's like, and rightly so, takes major offense to this cage fighter licking his face. So he's like, right, that's it. You guys are out. And I'm like, no, in my drunken
it's
stupor.
Luscious. It's so luscious, I needed to lick it.
I'm like, brother, I've never seen a beard so silky and soft. What is the conditioning regime that you use on this? No, and so I'm apologizing profusely, right? Because obviously I've clearly offended this guy and I wasn't trying to do that. I was just fucking hammered. I don't know why I did. I don't know what got into me to do that, right? But as I say, the guy's pissed. And he's like, no, get out. And I'm arguing my case because I didn't mean any offense. And I wasn't bothered about leaving. I just wanted him to not feel like I was disrespecting him. That was my main issue. So I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm hammered drunk. That's a hell of a fucking beard. I don't know why I did that. I've never done that before. And he's like, I don't care. You're gone. And then like a bunch of like Thai show up and they got like the billy clubs and shit. And I'm like, oh, this is going to get nasty. And then Sullivan says, come on, fuck this. Let's go back to my hotel suite. I got a giant suite. It's pretty much the top floor.
He's like, I see what you like to do to men's faces. Come back with me.
I never looked at it like that. He's like, yeah, fuck that, Mike. Let's get back to my room. In fact, no one else is invited. Just Mark and I. We're gonna talk about this behavior. He's from Australia or Ireland or wherever that accent was. Anyway, so he says, let's go. So then I say, all right, fair enough, because it was going to kick off majorly. And so we're leaving. We all jump on a tuk-tuk. But there was the makeup girls and some people like that. They got in the tuk-tuk. And on the back of it, there's like a little lip on the bumper. And him and I says, yeah, jump on the back of it. I do this all the time. So me and him are on the back of the tuk-tuk going down the streets. And we go over a bump or a pothole or something. And he just goes, whew, and flies off the back. And I just look and I see him, you know, like rolling down the street. I'm like, holy shit. So I'm like, stop. I said, we've lost Sully. Anyway, I run over to him. He's absolutely non-responsive. He's got a huge pool of blood emanating from the back of his head. I'm like, oh my God. Now, when I first started becoming a fighter, my manager at the time sent me on a lifeguard course because he said in between training sessions, you can work as a lifeguard and it won't make you tired. Fucking would put me to sleep, I reckon, being in a swimming pool that long. But anyway, I did a first aid course. So I started checking the pulse, checking the vital signs, checking his breath, all the rest of it. Nothing. This guy was dead, right? And I checked everything. I listened for breath. I felt for breath. I've checked Jesus. His heartbeat. Yeah. And he was dead. So I started giving him CPR, mouth-to-mouth, CPR, mouth-to-mouth, CPR. This went on for what seemed like an eternity, but
mouth-to-mouth,
probably...
Mouth-to-mouth, pushing on his chest, licking his beard. Mouth
licking
to mouth,
his beard.
Pushing on his chest, just a lick on his beard.
Licking his chest, finger in the ass. You know what I mean? It's an unorthodox technique, okay?
Running your fingers through his hair. I'm like, making eye contact.
Listen, I'm going to tongue you. It's an unorthodox technique, Lewis, but on my travels through Southeast Asia, the Tibetan monks showed me this way of saving someone's life. I didn't walk straight for a week, but still, it works. Hold on. Excuse me. No, so I'm giving him mouth-to-mouth CPR and licking his beard some more, and nothing, absolutely nothing. So I can't give up on the guy, and everyone, by this point, there's a huge crowd of people all around me, and everyone's crying, they're all upset, and they can't believe it, and they're screaming for a doctor and all the rest of it, and I'm on my hands and knees, and I've seen it done in movies, so I just think, fuck it, I'm on my hands and knees, and I just get a hammer fist, and I'm boom. Boom, as hard as I can, screaming, don't you die, Sully. Don't you die. And then all of a sudden, I fucking hit him boom, as hard as I could. And he just went, he came back to life. He fucking came back, I swear to God. And then an ambulance pulled up. They took him away. It took him about 18 months, I think, to recover from that. He was in a coma for a while. He had to learn how to talk again and things like that. I talked about this in my book, and I spoke to Sully first because I wasn't sure if I should share the information, but he gave me the all clear, so he's not bothered if I talk about it because, as I say, it's in my book. But yeah, that was terrible. And then I thought the police were going to pin it on me because they were looking for to stick it on someone. I had to go to the police station. I got interviewed a few times. That was a tricky one, but... Brian, if you were half the man I was, you would have rushed out into the garden and he would have saved his life and licked his beard. What say you, Brian?
If I was half the man you were, I probably wouldn't be doing this.
Well, I'm on a website and it's Sullivan Smith talking about it.
Sullivan Stapleton.
Oh, sorry, Sullivan Stapleton. I apologize. I'm failing to see your name mentioned in any
Nothing.
Of this story.
I got no credit whatsoever.
Are you kidding? Did he at least call you and say, thank you for saving my life?
Oh, of course. We've spoken about it. Because what happened was, obviously, that's a big production, right? I'm not sure how much Strike Back was the show. We were on Strike Back. And it had to be ground to a halt. And we went back out to Thailand a year, 18 months later to finish what we started. And when we were out there, we sat down in the same hotel suite we were heading back to, and I started licking his beard, and we got right back to it. It's like we hadn't skipped a beat. You know, when he invited me back to his room for some beard licking, we went right to it. No, we went to his room, and we sat down, and I told him the story, and there was another guy, there was a young actor with me as well, and we went through it bit by bit. It was very emotional, you know what I mean? A lot of emotions there, and yeah, told him all about it. So yeah, there you go. Anyway.
Dude, you licking that guy's face is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. How have I not heard that?
I know.
That's so funny.
That's the thing. I said that story. Then I'm like, well, it all started with me licking a guy's beard. Well, do you know what I mean?
It's so fucking funny. This is why I love Bisping, and this is why people have to appreciate Bisping, and this is why you're different than other fighters. Nobody is going to admit that they licked some random guy's fucking beard. They just won't do it. For whatever reason, the ego, whatever, but the fact that you recognize how funny that is and you will just tell that story.
Of course it's funny. Listen, that last week we talked about male masseuse artists, massage therapists. And I was worried after that. Maybe there might be a homophobic connotation, but no, not at all. I just prefer a woman. But disclaimer, Saturday, I had a male masseuse round at my house because my neck's fucked, my neck's bad. You know what I mean? I knew a good guy came round to my house, strong, firm hands, hell of a beard as well. No licking on this occasion. I was tempted though. I was tempted.
Ooh, you were too relaxed to lick. If you were a little less relaxed, you would have leaned right.
No, my neck's fucked. If it wasn't, I would have turned around and I would have got a little lick like a lizard.
Can't wait till somebody makes a gif of that. Just you going.
Oh God. You know, we had a really good show planned and we've gone off the rails. We haven't talked about anything because
I like it.
Right. No, me too. Right before we started, Brian drops the bomb on us. Cause we're just doing a little friendly catch up. How you doing, bud? How was your weekend? Oh yeah, my next door neighbor got shot. So obviously everything went out the window from there.
Hey, Mike, really quick, let's talk about one of our incredible sponsors, which is CBDMD. You're wearing the shirt right now. You love this company that much that not only do you put them into your body, but you wear them on top of your body.
I put them on my body, in my body, around my body, even though there's none right now. Listen, yeah, of course, CBDMD. You've all heard of CBD, but this is one of the, if not the market leader, best prices per milligram, all organic, all grown inside the United States. I was talking last week, I think I was, about my neck. My neck is still fucking killing. It's really, really bad. The only relief I get is when I put on the CBDMD freeze, and then at night I use the recover, and it really is helping. It's helping alleviate the problem and helping me manage the pain. And if you've got any kind of inflammation, anxiety, problems sleeping at night, if you want to get your body back into homeostasis, Google what that means, because I sure as hell don't, then CBD will help. There's the CBD MDPM, which blends 500 milligrams of high quality CBD with melatonin, valerian root, chamomile, and other sleep promoting ingredients to create a powerful and effective sleep aid. You will get knocked out pretty fast and you'll wake up feeling like Mike Harrington. By that, I mean, not a care in the world, Lewis.
Homeless? I don't really understand where you were going with that. That's okay.
Not a care in the world. He walks through this life without a fucking care. He's on CBDMD constantly. He's happy. I don't know what he is, but he's careless. He's carefree.
He's on CBD. Is that what he's on? Okay. I thought he had way worse problems.
No. Look,
do the research right now. CBD, literally, I was walking through the mall the other day, and there was a store that I went to, and they were selling CBD products in just a regular like makeup store. It's become such a big thing. Do the research. It really can help you, and we offer you a pretty incredible deal right now. If you go to CBDMD.com, CBDMD.com, use the promo code BYM when you check out. We're actually going to save you 20% off your entire bill. That is 1/5 off your bill. I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to love it. They have great products. Go to CBDMD.com. Make sure you use that promo code BYM. Save 20% and get yourself feeling happy and healthy. All right, where were we?
Mickey Gall, UFC fighter, UFC welterweight, will be joining us very shortly, in about 7 minutes, I believe. He's booked a fight with Mike Perry. And of course, we're going to break down what happened at UFC 250. Stunning night of fights there. Cody Garbrandt back to winning ways in a sensational performance. Aljamain Sterling. There was a lot of good performances at stake. But what should we do for the next 7 minutes, Lewis? Should we talk about the fact that Conor McGregor has retired once again?
Conor's retiring. Yeah, whatever. I feel the same way about, and we'll talk Cejudo as well, because apparently Cejudo's not retiring now. But we'll get into that probably after Mickey. But it does relate. I mean, I don't believe Conor. It's how many times has Conor retired? It's a boy who cried wolf. I taught my son the story recently, the boy who cried wolf. And this is the same thing over and over again. Maybe in the moment he believes it, but it's just sort of like, I think Conor's addicted to attention sometimes, and he just, you know, in the right before the main event starts, he goes and says he's retiring. It's a little bit fucking, a little eye-rolly, I should say.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, who knows what's going on behind the scenes, because there's always much more to it, right? But yeah, he's done it before. As you say, it's the boy that's cried wolf. It would appear from the outside, I don't think anyone's convinced, that he's actually retired. I mean, he's a young man. He's in his prime. He's the biggest star the sport's ever seen. He's bigger than all the biggest stars put together, to be honest. And he's an absolute, you know, he's a cash cow. He's the cash cow, simple as that. And there's money to be made, and he's not going to leave that in there. I don't think. Who knows? Listen, he has achieved a lot. He's got a huge brand name. He doesn't really need to fight again. So maybe there is, but I doubt that it's a real retirement.
I have a question. Why do you think Conor is so popular? It's kind of weird because I can't really put my finger on it. Because, yes, it's partially due to the fact with the UFC, and they're such an amazing marketing machine, but it's not like anybody else has really touched that level of popularity. You just said it a second ago. He may be more popular than everybody put together. And that's obviously exaggerating to a certain degree, but he is definitely head and shoulders above the pack. And it's not like he always wins. There's something about it. And yes, he is good on the mic, but it's not like, oh my God, I'm blown away. What do you attribute his success and his popularity to from your perspective?
Yeah, so hold on. I'm going to ask Lucas to be quiet because him and his friend are upstairs and it sounds like they're going to come through the ceiling any minute. Why is he so popular? I mean, it's a number of things. Yeah, okay, there was a push from the UFC. That's great. But they wouldn't have got behind him and give him a push unless there was a reason to. You know what I'm saying? And they obviously saw here, man, we've got a hugely marketable star. Number one, he's got Ireland behind him, right? The country of Ireland, but also a large percentage of Americans have Irish heritage, you know? So there's in America, a lot of people are going to get behind that person. He can fight. His performances were absolutely sublime. They were very explosive. They were original. And then on the mic, of course, he can talk. He can put the whole package together. Then you throw in some controversy in there. He does not give a fuck. You know, he's the whole package. He looks good. He fights well. He talks good. He's from Ireland. There wasn't a breakout star from Ireland. Half of the fucking country. In fact, every American I speak to claims to be Irish. They all claim to be Irish.
I have Irish blood.
See what I mean? You fucking incestuous lot. I mean, what was going on back in the day on those ships, on the Mayflower or whatever it is? What was going on? But everyone's got some Irish blood in them, or so they say. My mother's Irish. My fucking mother talks like this. We could get her on the phone right now, but she talks like this, right? And I got a lot of family in Ireland, but I don't ever claim to be Irish. No, fuck that. You know why? Because I'm an English motherfucker. English, deal with
it. Well, that's a kind of an interesting thing, right? So he does have an entire country behind him. And it's similar with you, right? So you were the guy from England, right? So for a while, there was a couple guys that were fighting out of England, but nobody had the success that you had. You also were able to talk on the microphone. You won the Ultimate Fighter when it was literally at the peak of its fucking, you know, the height of its fame. So there's a lot of factors there as well. But I think the nationalistic pride and having an entire country behind you and not splitting it, like Brazil has 1,000 fighters. You know what I'm saying? Like there is only really one big Irish fighter that made it to the UFC. Maybe I'm mistaken about that, but that's a huge part of it when you can get an entire fucking everything, a country, their economy, everything.
It's not just that. It's not just that though, because, you know, I mean, as you said, yeah, I was English and I had the support of the country behind me in the UK. And thank you. You know, I'm very, very proud of that. I'm very grateful for it. But also in America, the Americans love the Irish. They love the Irish. And as we just said, there's a lot of people have Irish heritage. On the flip side, they fucking hate the English. They do not like the English. They throw 1776 in me all the time. You know what I mean?
So there's nothing fun about the English. Like the Irish is like, yeah, let's have a drink. Let's go put on some green. Kiss me, I'm Irish. The English were like, we're going to eat some blood pudding.
Get fucked.
Dark and dreary. There's rain clouds around. What the fuck is fun about England?
What you think? It's not dark and dreary and rain clouds in Ireland. It's a stone throw away.
It's all fucking rainbows. There's leprechauns everywhere.
At the end of the rainbow, get my lucky charms. No. So listen. It's a bunch of things, but mainly down to he's got charisma, man. You can't deny it. Love him or hate him, the guy's got fucking charisma for days. You know, he's a good talker. He's a good fighter. He's got the whole package. There you go. Bish, bash, bash. I don't want to suck his dick too much, man. Come on. Don't make me do that. Mickey Gall, where are you? I'm going down the Conor McGregor dick-sucking fucking tunnel. Get me out of here. Help me.
But he's not retiring, right? We all know this. If you had a bet, I would bet anything in the world Conor McGregor doesn't retire. Harrington, please pull up some of the quotes because I think he was just talking about how he's not inspired. There's no fights left for him.
which is sort of crazy because I feel like just a few months ago, he was talking about how inspired he was and he had this game plan to come out, fight this guy, this guy, this guy. And he was just, you know, anybody in my way. Conor McGregor can literally fight anybody he wants, technically, to a certain degree, with the exception of just demanding a title shot and make millions and millions of dollars. He can keep on fighting Cowboy Cerrone's all day long and make, I mean, millions per fight. It's sort
of... Well, he could fight any Tom, Dick, and Harry. He's a star, simple as that. People will tune in to watch him fight. It's funny that you mentioned that, but one Floyd Mayweather came out of the woodwork yesterday and tweeted or on Instagram... Said, oh, really? You're retiring, are you? That's funny, because I remember just recently you were telling Mike Tyson how you know you could beat me in a rematch. So when you're ready or your balls are big enough, give me a shout and we can do another one. And you never know. That's Mayweather probably just trolling because that's, you know, he wants to insert himself into the conversation. However, on the flip side, he might just be like, hey, another dance around with Conor, another $200 million in his account, 75 in Conor's, because it's not going to be nowhere near as popular as the first one. But it would do big numbers. So, you know, who knows? Who knows what to believe? I'll say this, though. What are you willing to bet that Conor would fight again? I will bet a lot.
Everything. Conor's fighting again. Conor's fighting again. Conor's not retiring.
Same. I'll bet everything apart from my beloved SpongeBob cup. Okay? This motherfucker's staying with me. I've had this for years. Okay?
When I come, I'm coming to your place in the end of the month. I'm stealing my SpongeBob cup.
You touched... Well, I got two. So it would be easy for you to steal one, but if
nice.
I see
we both
one,
had one now, that'd be kind of nice.
No, but like it's just the way it feels, the thickness of the rim, you know what I mean? It reminds me of, well, hold on, it's almost like I'm licking a luscious beard. It's amazing. You know, that's how it makes me feel. That's what I think of immediately.
Yeah, dude. All right, so what about Anderson Silva? Now, I guess Conor saying he wants to fight Anderson. Anderson said he wants to fight Conor. That's a fight that, not for nothing, I think has potential to be a really big fight, super exciting fight. I don't know if it necessarily makes sense. There's no other implications except for the fact that it's a super fight, right? They don't fight in the same weight class. You know, Anderson.
I think that might be part of the issue. I think Conor might be getting frustrated because I think he's talked about wanting to, I mean, I don't know if he went to the UFC, but I saw on social media, he was saying, listen, I wanted to fight Gaethje. I wanted to fight Anderson Silva. He elaborated with Ariel Helwani a little bit. He said the game doesn't excite him anymore, but I think he's just getting frustrated because he can't get a fight. You got to bear in mind, there's this pandemic hit, you know, international travel was ground to a halt, you know? So I think everybody's just fucked off at the minute. Everybody's frustrated. Everybody wants to be traveling. Everybody wants to be living their life as normal, but there's been a lot of frustrations is the best word of using. So I think maybe the fact he isn't fighting and he probably did want to be active this year and he hasn't been able to, then, you know, he's just voicing his concern and his displeasure at the situation.
Well, this is why everyone has their cell phone with Twitter on it. And it's like, you sort of in the moment you press send and you go, I didn't even really mean that. Well, what are you gonna do?
The stupidity on Twitter is just out of this world. It's out of this world. I've got to stop going on there because I tweet one thing and it gets misconstrued into whatever. They just completely take it out of context. They misunderstand it completely. Yeah, I got to stay off Twitter because I just find myself arguing with absolute numbskulls.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about actually just hiring a company to run my social media because I do the same thing. And not only that, like I'm constantly in my phone staring at it. Like I was hanging out with this chick recently. She's like, you're on your phone a lot, huh? And I really had to think about it because I was like, I'm probably on my phone way more often because at this point, if she's saying it, you know it's a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we all need to get on our devices less. I was saying that to my wife yesterday about Lucas. We got to get him on off his iPad a little bit. We were going to get into vacations and holidays and travel and stuff like that, but we'll do that on the next show because we've been going for a while here. We're just trying to fill because we're waiting for Mickey Gold. What is the status of that Harrington or Mike or Brian?
I'm communicating with him. He told me that he's doing another interview at 4:30 and he's calling right after. So he said 4:45 should be good, but okay. I'm assuming it's just going a little bit long. So let's talk Cejudo though, because this sort of relates to Conor, and he's apparently now not retired. You sent me a tweet earlier from somebody.
Yeah, no, that's right. I sent a tweet out, but I think I remember the bullet points. I mean, basically he said he'll come out of retirement. That's just ridiculous. He's been retired for a number of weeks, but he'll come out of retirement to fight Alexander Volkanovski, which again, I don't know if the UFC would do that. Right? Because you had 125, you won 135, you delayed some of those divisions somewhat, certainly the 125ers, because eventually he was stripped of it. And now they're going to let him go up and just leapfrog the entire pack and fight Volkanovski. There's a lot of good fights for Volkanovski at 145. He's already having a rematch with Max Holloway. And then there's a bunch of good contenders there. I understand champion versus champion. It's very sellable. It's very marketable. But the champion that's jumping up the weight class or going down a weight class, that's a beautiful scenario for them, because the hard part about attaining a world championship, yes, of course, the title fight, fighting for the belt, that fight's going to be hard. Not in my account. It was very fucking easy. I didn't even take a shot. But generally, having that fight is going to be hard. But the hard part is earning that fight. You know what I mean? Working your way through all these hungry contenders that are working their ass off, that it means their life to them. You know, and you've got to go through, be perfect, beat a number of guys, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever it is.
And even then, pull it back before that, Mike, where you're like a young fighter or just starting out your career and there's no money in it. And you're fucking doing it you're driving hours and hours and hours to go fight for pennies. And you're sacrificing all that, though. That's like all that time that you invest.
Yeah, but they would have done that in their original weight class. You know what I mean? You don't just become a UFC champion in whatever weight class without doing that. So they probably did that already. But they can't. But as I say, the benefit of doing that is that you bypass all the contenders. You know what I mean? Every time you fight a world-class opponent, which the top 5, the top 10, top 15, they should all be world-class opponents, right? Putting together a long win streak against those type of people without those kind of skill sets is incredible. Hard. And then when you do that, then you get your title fight, and then boom, there you go, you're the champion, right? And then, but then the hard part of that is that you're fighting the number one contender every time, so staying the champion is extremely hard. But the benefit for Cejudo is that he went up to 135, he bypassed the entire pack at 135, the wolf pack, if you will, and then now he wants to do it at 145. And as I say, because it does create some problems. It does create a logjam in those divisions. I don't know if they do that. Certainly after he just said, I'm retired. And now he's like, okay, I'll come out of retirement, but I want a title fight in another weight class. I don't know. It seems like a big ask. I hope for him he gets it.
I never considered sort of the jumping the pack, right? And sort of what it takes to get that title shot. And it is pretty interesting, because think about how many times you were right there and it was a split decision loss. And it was like the toughest fight. And you're like, fuck, dude, I should have won that. I think two times.
Yep.
That happened. And you sort of consider the fact that those guys who are fighting for that number one, number two, number three contendership, those guys are as fucking hungry as it gets. They want that title shot with every bit of their soul. Not saying that a champion doesn't have, but I feel like a champion, even when they say that, like, oh, you got to beat the champion, I feel like he has a little bit of an easier time weirdly dealing with the pressure. I think coming up for those number one, number two contender fights, it's probably pretty crazy. And to not have to really do that, to just be going in title fight after title fight after title fight, it is a little bit unfair. I almost feel like, after you said that, I almost feel like maybe he should take a fight at 145 and win once at 145.
Yes.
And prove himself.
Yeah, no, for sure. I totally agree with that. You know, to your point just there, I remember when I was coming up as a fighter, or not coming up, I was in the UFC, I was doing well, I was pretty established, but I was eyeing a title fight with Anderson Silva. I was doing well, right? But Anderson Silva was on top of the sport back then. You know, he was like Conor McGregor, not as famous, but he was the man. He was the face of the UFC. This is when he was delivering all those spectacular knockouts, very inventive, very, very creative. And he was earning huge amounts of money. And I was like, if I was to get my title fight, I wonder if I could ask the UFC, and they would have told me to go fuck myself, and rightly so, because your contract is your contract. I was like, Anderson Silva can train so much better. He has such a big established team around him now. He can have masseuses. He's got a nutritionist. He's got this, that, and the other that I couldn't afford. But like, the contender has to, it's like, well, and that's how it is. It's a story as old as time. Look at Rocky. Rocky won when he goes up against Apollo Creed. Apollo Creed's there. He's got all these fucking people around him. He's got the masseuse. He's got this. He's got the sports psychologist. He's got the team. He's got the nutritionist. He's getting a massage in his office. And there's Rocky, and he's got fuck all. He hasn't got a to piss him, but he's got to go up against that guy. He's got to climb that mountain and take on this behemoth of the fight world with nothing. That's why he goes to Mickey. He's like, will you train me for this? And Mickey's like, get fucked. It's going to be a death sentence for you. Eventually, obviously, he trains him. I think it was a draw at the end. But yeah, that's the problem as well. When you're fighting a champion and you're coming up, you haven't got the resources that they have access to because they're a dominant champion. They've got the money and everybody's trying to get involved. When you're the champion, everyone wants a little piece. Oh, Mike, you know, I could massage your lymph nodes in between training sessions. I'll fix your food. I'll be your nutritionist. I'll be your masseuse, whatever. You have all these people that cling or attract to a champion because they want a piece of the pie and they want a little bit of the fame and they want to help their outside business. That's why now, fighters inside the UFC, in the UFC, pardon me, they have it so good these days compared to the early days. I was at the Performance Institute. They've got a whole team of people dedicated to fixing the bodies, giving you massages, all kinds of treatment, whatever it is you need, they can do it there. They have all the nutrition taken care of, trifecta meals. They develop a diet for you. And then fight week, when you get there, your meals are delivered to your carbohydrate intake, your fats, everything that you need. Those meals are designed for you and given to you fight week. I used to remember going to all kinds of restaurants trying to find a fucking meal, walking around whatever strange city I'm in, looking at menus and going, nah, there's nothing on here that I can use, you know, or that I can eat. Yeah. They get given the sweet sweat. They get given saunas in the bedrooms, and it's great. I'm not complaining, by the way. It's awesome. The UFC do this now. It's a professional sport. It's the big leagues. But it's so much fucking easier these days. It's crazy.
Yeah, you sound like you're a little bit jealous of these young bucks and the life fucking, that they get to live right now.
You bet your fucking ass I'm jealous. And when I fucking get hold of one of them and the cameras aren't rolling, I was like, this is back in my day. Sweet sweat.
Does it make them softer, though?
I had to buy sweet sweat. And it was very expensive.
Does it make them softer, though? Like, do you think, like, sort of having these things or... Or do you think it's those advantages only help? Because I, in a weird way, like maybe, you know, Rocky, the way you use a Rocky analogy, like, yeah, Rocky was fucking gritty. And when you get comfortable and you get, you know, that's why Rocky had to go train in Russia in Rocky IV. Because that shit wasn't going to work anymore. You can't be this rich hootie-tootie motherfucker.
Or remember, he went down to Long Beach or somewhere with the brothers, and then he walked in, and they were all like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But he had to get rhythm. He had to learn how to move, and he was trying to dance. Remember that scene? No, fucking brilliant.
It was great. Paulie was all racist. It was great.
Yeah, Paulie was racist as hell. It's not funny. I'm not laughing, by the way. I'm just laughing at how inappropriate that was. You know, talking of inappropriate movies, you know, obviously without all these protests and riots and things like that and injustice, and it's a great movement. It's a great cause. I was sitting on my couch on Saturday waiting for my gay masseuse to turn up and to work with my neck. It wasn't gay. It's a joke. And Trading Places was on TV.
Love
and
it.
I was watching it and I was like, oh my, well, number one, yeah, great movie. But I was like, wow, this movie compared, like when you consider the racial tension, what's happening in the world and you look at Trading Places, I mean, it's, I don't know how you would describe it. There was a lot of things that were very relevant in today's society and today's movement.
Well, they also, those things are so glaring now, right? So the things that are inappropriate, they just sort of, they scream at you. You're like, oh my God, we're not used to hearing these sort of words anymore. The way that people are so blasé, and especially in a very comedic light. I remember I was watching Home Alone Part 2, Lost in New York with my son. And in one of the scenes, the two bad guys, Joe Pesci and whatever the other guy's name was, Daniel Stern, they have Macaulay Culkin and they're fucking walking him down the street. And there's like a beautiful blonde woman standing in front of them. And Macaulay Culkin leans out and he pinches the girl's butt. And the girl turns around and she thinks it's Joe Pesci and she punches him. And I remember just thinking, like, they're not sexually assaulting a woman for a gag with a little kid so he can get away from these bad guys today. That's just not happening anymore. And it was so just like, it's very funny because I'm not an SGW or a pussy at all, but it's so culturally speaking, it screams at you these little things. You're like, oh my God, wow, that's actually in a kid's movie?
Yeah, but I have no issue with that whatsoever. Some of the stuff in Trading Places, this is a great fucking movie, but I was like, you know, I don't know, the inequality in the way people are treated. You know, I remember he comes out of the whatever, like where all the lawyers are, and then he bumps into Dan Aykroyd's character. And he starts screaming, "Officer, this man's trying to rob me." And then, you know, he gets arrested and stuff. And it reminded me of that woman in Central Park. You know what I'm saying? It's exactly what fucking went down. It was crazy. But Macaulay Culkin grabbing a woman's ass. Come on. I got no issue with that. Go on.
Well, I was gonna say you're right, and it was Eddie Murphy, right, in Trading Places? Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, yeah. Do you watch Eddie Murphy's stand-up specials?
You know what? I haven't. I remember when the one when he had the red leather suit on. What was it called? I remember that.
Delirious.
Back in the day, I saw a little bit of it. I've got to go back and watch it.
Incredible. Though. I'm a massive fan. I mean, as a kid, I saw Eddie Murphy's two stand-up specials, Eddie Murphy's Raw and Delirious. They're both hour and a half movies, and he's a kid, dude. I think he's 19 in the one. He's like 22 in the next one. It's crazy when you consider how young he is and how talented he is, and he's fucking a master storyteller. Eddie Murphy, it holds up in a very, very big way. It's still very funny. You should watch it. You'll dig it. But the opening bit in both of his specials, the first, if you go on his album, the opening bit is called Faggots. That's the name of the bit. And he
cancel
goes
him.
In.
Cancel him right now. Everything Eddie Murphy's done, cancel.
They'll probably try to. And he goes into how, you know, and he just makes fun of gay people. And it's just very, but it's so funny because it's so, and today, it's the one bit that it, you hear it and it just doesn't resonate anymore. You're like, oh shit, it doesn't hold up. And it's not because I personally am offended by that word, but it's just because we're sort of not, the way that we hear things, the way that we're presented entertainment now, it just, if you hear something like that, it makes you kind of go like, oh shit. So it has to be done in a certain way. And, you know, it's very interesting, but you should go back and watch those. Cause I think it's sort of interesting to sort of see the way that comedy evolves and it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, no, I will take a look because a lot of people recommend them to me. And listen, it is what it is. That was the climate. That was the culture back then. Fortunately, people are more understanding these days.
And they would say that on cable television back in the day. That word wasn't like, I remember when I was a kid, WWE, Bobby the Brain Heenan, Jerry Lawler called Goldust that. As a kid, I remember just like that wasn't an issue at all. And you know, times
are changing. And listen, by the way, it's a good thing. We are as a nation, as a society, as worldwide members of the public, we are way more tolerant these days, as we should be. And we still got some grounds to go, still got some making up to do in that regard. But you know, if that's how it was back then, that was a cultural climate, then so be it. You know, Coming to America 2 apparently gets released later this year. I'm very excited for that one.
I'm excited
Coming to
about
America
it.
Was awesome. All right, UFC 250. Let's get into that because Mickey Gall. Jesus, Mickey, you may be so fine, but you ain't ever on time. Wow. What the fuck? Don't make me rhyme, even though they are sublime. Lewis.
I just told him it was a crime that he would not be on time.
And I'm going to drink some wine and I will issue him a fine.
Yeah, he's quite the swine.
Especially when he dine.
Would you like a lime with your wine?
Will you stop giving me the whining?
You should unsubscribe from the podcast right now.
Do you know what listening. I do? Because I'm always like messing around with the kids and rhyming stuff. I go through the alphabet. So we're trying to go ein. So A, B, Brian, C, kind, no, D, dine, E, fine, G, gine, grime, H, hind. Hind and whatever. So that's what I do. Just go through the alphabet and then boom, there you go. Mickey Gall. All right. Well, listen, Mickey, you're dead to us. Even when you do come on.
Ooh, oh, he's going on Zoom now. He just texted me.
I don't care. Don't fucking keep me waiting on my own show. Where's the nerve of this guy? What was his last fight? He's got the nerve to have us waiting. Harrington, what was Mickey Gall's last fight? Thanks for the cheat sheet that you never sent.
That was in August.
He fought in August.
Yeah, at UFC Newark against Salim Tuari.
Did he win?
Yeah, he picked up a decision win. Pretty convincingly.
I'm just looking him up. Oh, there he is. What's up, Mickey?
Yeah.
There we go. What's up, buddy? How you doing? Listen.
What's up, champ?
Hey, good to see you, my friend. Listen, Lewis was just bitching nonstop because he said you were supposed to be on at 145. And I was like, give the guy a break. You're training for a fight. You're a busy man. And he was fucking going hard on you, Mickey.
Bisping threw you under the bus. He's rooting for fucking Platinum Perry right now. He was about to ban you from all things Believe You Me. If you didn't call in at this exact moment, Bisping was about to say, he's banned. It's over.
I don't believe that. I thought Mike would like me more than Perry for this fight.
Hey, definitely.
Mike are better friends.
Let's get right into that then, seeing as you mentioned Mike Perry. So that you got a fight with Mike Perry. I believe I'm commentating that fight, so I'm looking forward to it. Lewis was telling me things have got a little personal between you two. What's going on?
Things have gotten personal, Lewis?
Well, he was just talking shit on Twitter, I said earlier on today. Did you see the tweet that he put out? He's talking all that shit.
I was a weak-ass opponent, yeah. That's all right. I hope he thinks I'm a weak-ass opponent. That's all right. I'm not worried about it. Look, I'm a low-key Mike Perry fan. I think he's fun. I think he's a violent, like, you know, he's a savage. He's a savage, but I'm a killer. And I'm going to be in there. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to go in there and do my thing. I'm not, you know, I think he's fun. I think it's a fun fight for the fans, but you know, I know I could take him out. I think it's the dumbest fighter versus the smartest fighter.
Well, so hold on, he's underestimating you though. Does that make you more confident if somebody underestimates you?
Yeah, that's what I said. Like, I hope he thinks I'm a weak ass opponent. You know, see if he thinks I'm a weak ass opponent when I put him on his back.
So obviously, you know, people talk a bit of shit when the fight gets booked. You start having a bit of fun. Do you think he's having a bit of fun there, or do you actually take offense to that and you're like, I'm gonna fucking show this guy what's up?
Yeah, you know, I'm a proud dude. I don't want someone to call me weak ass, but I don't care. I expect that. I expect that out of him. That's you know, but it doesn't bother me. And yeah, maybe it does get me a little excited to show him what's actually up.
And you were out training striking with Joe Schilling out in Los Angeles for a while. Obviously, the world is put on pause. You're back on the East Coast now. How do you feel about coming back home, coming back to Jersey, and training back in Jersey again?
I love it. You know, Jersey's my home. I had a good time in LA, and like, you know, I got 8 pro fights, so I'm always gonna take all the opportunities I can get to train with these legends. You know, Schilling and Eve Edwards, or you know, I was just out with Matt Brown. You know, everywhere. I'm trying to learn. You know, get learned up as quick as I can. I'm trying to get as good as I can, as quick as I can. You know, 1% better every day. And I got a great crew in New Jersey. Although, you know, I'm like the team leader out here. So I think it's important for me to go to these other places and get pushed. But I also have a great group of guys that push me around here. So,
you know, Mickey, you know, sorry, I thought you were done. I was just going to say, that's crazy. So you only have 8 professional fights on your record.
Yeah, I was in the UFC after my first pro fight.
Man.
Two months later.
That's insane, Mickey. I mean, that really, because it feels like you've been around. I mean, I remember that. What was that, 3 years ago? Maybe 4 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, I called out CM Punk in my first pro fight, and Dana was there. And they you know, booked me 2 months later to fight that dude Jackson. And if I won, I got to fight Punk. And, you know, then I beat Jackson in 45 seconds, beat Punk in 2 minutes, and I got the Sage Northcutt fight. And then, yeah.
Did you beat Sage Northcutt, right, if I remember rightly? You choked him out?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, no, good for you. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, so you're literally learning on the job. A lot of people, when they get to the UFC, they've still got a ways to go. They're still rounding out their skill sets. But you have literally fight to fight, training camps in between, moving out to LA, trying to do everything you can to get better. But you're kind of learning on the job. I mean, that's pretty inspirational to a lot of people.
Yeah, I've been blessed to grow up in the UFC, which not a lot of people, you know, can say or have done. And I think if anyone can handle it, it's me. I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to have, you know, a lot expected out of me, every move scrutinized. I'm ready for it. I'm, you know, my whole career under a microscope. It's great. It's going to be a great story at the end.
Yeah. I mean, Mickey, we've been friends for a little while, and it's kind of crazy to watch your journey, because it is a fairly unique journey. Are you still feeling like what they call the octagon jitters? Do you still get nervous, or is it sort of that behind you at this point?
I get nervous for every fight, and I assume I will for every fight. But not, you know, not, I don't let the fear hold me back. You know, I use those butterflies. I make them fly in formation. You know, it's, you know, there's definitely something to be said for experience. Like, that's another reason why I go travel around. I try and, you know, learn up from all these guys. Like, you know, I'm hanging out with Mike in LA, I'm picking his brain and always trying to learn from these legends. So, you know, I know there's no lesson quite like being in the cage, and you know, you learn and get better with the fights. You learn big lessons there. But you know, I'm just trying to do my best and learn as much as I can, as quick as I can.
Well, as you said, I mean, you're talking about nerves there. You'll always get nerves, buddy. Even towards the end of my career, I used to sit there and I'd say to my coaches, I say this all the time, what the fuck am I doing, you know? So, you know, get used to that feeling, buddy, because it never goes away. But that's good. You want them. You need them. They make you perform. They make you faster. They make you sharper. You're doing all the right things. You know, you're moving out to LA. You're trying to do everything you can. And I commend you. Last time we spoke, I don't think you had a manager. Have you got yourself a manager yet?
I started working with Dave Martin.
Okay, things working out for you?
Yeah. He helped me get this fight. You know, the UFC talked about wanting to do this Mike Perry fight a few months ago. We were like, yeah, hell yeah, let's do it. And you know, now I guess Mike's assigned. You know, finally agreed to fight this weak ass opponent. So here we go.
Obviously, sorry, go ahead, Lewis. No, my bad.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, you. I think this fight's really, really good for you. You've been training with Schilling, right? You've been working on your striking. It's something that you've been really proud of for a long time. Is that the game plan to come in this fight and strike with Platinum Perry? Because he's obviously known as a striker. You have a massive advantage on the ground.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a fight. So we're definitely going to strike. I'm definitely going to hit him in the face. And, you know, if the takedown presents itself, you know, I'll take him down. And I think I definitely have the biggest advantage on the ground. I think, you know, I have a lot of pride and belief in my jiu-jitsu. So, you know, if it gets there, I think I should be able to take him out pretty quick.
Yeah, well, that's what you're supposed to do, right? You look at your opponent, you assess their game plan, you look for weaknesses, and then you try to exploit those weaknesses. There's nothing cowardly about doing that. It's the easiest path to victory. And, you know, I would assume you have a grappling advantage, although he is working now with a lot of great jiu-jitsu guys, Jack Ray Soldier and a bunch of other dudes. Just recently he came out and said, I'm not going to have any coaches anymore. I'm just going to have my new girlfriend in the corner. What do you think of that?
Sounds like a real smart thing Mike Perry would do.
I'm not surprised, but
I'm not taking him any. You know, I'm not taking him any lighter for that. I'm gonna be ready for the Savage.
Yeah. You also, I should say, Mickey, I was just watching Spencer Confidential the other day on Netflix, and then I saw my boy Mickey Gall pop up in it.
Oh, so you didn't blink?
No. I saw you. Well, I had to rewind a couple times.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, dude. Blink, what's going on? Are you trying to get into the acting thing more?
Yeah. I mean, that stuff's fun. And, you know, it's not like when those things come, it's great. I was able to do another, a movie with Sean Patrick Flannery this summer.
Whoa, the fuck is going on? If any MMA fighter is going to do shitty little bit parts in blinking, you miss them shows on programs that no one's ever going to see, it's me. Okay.
Hey, now, I saw you in Den of Thieves this weekend.
Don't be stealing my word, buddy.
I'm like, that's Bisping. I can tell just by you walking.
Hey, don't be stealing my work. I need the crumbs. There's little crumbs out there, and they're fucking mine. I'll fight you over those, Mickey. Nah, I'm just kidding, man. How was that in the acting? I mean, did you get nervous? Because I remember the first time I ever did any acting stuff. I'd never acted. I didn't go to drama school or anything like that. And I shit my pants. I'm fine now. I'm totally at ease now. But the first time, I was like, oh, my God. Put me in an octagon any day of the week. But as I said, now I enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's like it's kind of similar where it's like when they're like, all right, ready, action. Like, all right, it's like ready, round, go. It's like, so, but with this is like but it's like less stressful because it's like they can just be like, cut. All right, let's do it again. You know, but I still get like those, like I get that excitement that similarly to fighting. So I do enjoy it. I like it. And, you know, after my career, maybe I could be like Bisping getting these crappy little movies.
Hey, listen, no, I'll do some good stuff. Season 2 won't come out, so you're checking
it. You know, I'm joking.
But no, it is fun. But as you say, it is very similar to fighting. It's just all about the preparation. Anything you do in life, you've got to prepare for it. To put the preparation in, it'll make it a lot easier. And then reps as well. The more times you do it, the more you get used to it. You get familiar with yourself, familiar with the surroundings, how the whole process works. You know, do you have a coach or anything like that? You go to an acting school or an acting coach?
I did, and actually, I've been talking with Mike Stout about.
Oh shit, my boy, that's my agent. Hold on, you're taking my fucking parts. You're signing with my fucking agent, Mickey. Seriously, get your.
Hey, I feel like if they're looking for like a if they're looking for like a young American dude, that's me. If they're looking for like a handsome Brit, like that's you. I don't think like we're gonna be totally competing for stuff. You know what I mean? I can't put an accent on like that, Mike.
Well, I can't put an American on either. I thought you were going to say, listen, if they're looking for a young, good-looking American, they're going to come for me. If they're looking for an old, fucked-up, deformed Brit, I guess they'll call you, Mike. It's a very niche look that they're going
for
there.
Some sort of like Quasimodo, Bell Tower movie, just, you know.
One eye, cauliflowered ears, fucked-up neck, can't walk, has a limp, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope they do Den of Thieves 2. And I hope they do Den of Thieves 2, and it's you leading a heist over that little shop in hey, man. Hey,
they're working on it right now. The script is being written as we speak, and hopefully we're filming Den of Thieves 2 later this year or early next year, but it's in the works. I'm very, very excited for that. Anyway, back to you, Mickey. Lewis, you got your hand up at the back. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to say, I mean, dude, look, I know, you know, you're a family guy. This whole thing, the quarantine, we haven't spoken really at all since this all fucking started. Just I find it very interesting now with the fights coming back, just sort of the quality of training that you were able to have, right? So there's certain people that literally won't go out. There's certain people that will not shake hands, won't go have a beer with you. Then there's certain people like, fuck it, I'm ready to hug and kiss and do whatever. Did you find it sort of difficult to find high quality training partners during this time? Now that you have a fight coming up, is it something that you're sort of concerned about at all?
No, I haven't. I can honestly say I made the most of my time during this, during the quarantine. You know, I've been running my ass off and wrestling my balls off. I've been wrestling with, my buddy, he's an Albanian, like Olympic level wrestler. And yeah, I've upped my wrestling. I've upped my cardio. I've been responsible. I've been doing the right things during this quarantine time. I haven't, you know, use it as an excuse to be lazy. You know, I got a lot of goals. So, you know, I'm working hard.
And what about the fact that there's going to be no crowd? Have you done any kind of visualization, mental preparation for that? Because it doesn't change it when it's all said and done, because it's you and your opponent in a cage fighting. But, you know, but it is a slightly different environment. Have you given any thought to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just going to be more like sparring. I think if anything, the crowd adds an extra variable that could maybe make you get a little crazy. I think I'll be nice, calm, cool, collected like I should be.
Yeah, it's almost weird because it's like, does the lack of a crowd make you feel more pressure or less pressure? Because I almost feel like with the lack of a crowd, you're almost weirdly more under a microscope. You know, the only, like, there's no distractions. Everyone's eyes are on you. You get 10, 15 people, whatever the production is, they're all really focused. Dana White's right there. You can make eye contact with him.
Well, on that point, real fast, here's what you got to do. Because, you know, there is a little bit of bad blood, a little bit of tension brewing. When the fighters talk to one another, and that's always good anyway, but it's like it's really amplified because there's no crowd. So, you know, you got to start, Mike Perry will talk. You know what I mean? You guys got to start talking some shit mid-fight. That will get you a 50,000 fight of the night, almost guaranteed.
Yeah. I expect it. I'm ready for it all. You know, you got to be ready for anything with this kid. And I will be, and I think you can feed off the crowd. Sometimes you can feed off that energy, but you know, like I said, you know, we spar in front of non crowds and train mostly in front of non crowds. So
yeah,
you know, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, as you say, ultimately when it's all said and done, it's not much different. It is just like a rather more intense sparring session. Listen, we appreciate you joining us. Before we let you get out of here, good luck in the fight. Cause as you say, Mike Perry, for everything that's said and done, you know, your differences, he is a beast inside the octagon. He likes to brawl, likes to mix it up. Anything you want to say, any shout outs you want to do before we let you go?
No, I just, you know, big fans of both you guys. Appreciate you guys having me. Always good to talk to you guys.
Anytime, my friend.
Mickey, you're the man, dude. Thank you, bro. I'll call you soon.
Good luck with the rest of camp, buddy. I'll be there. I'll be commentating. All the best, mate.
Look forward to seeing you in Vegas, my friend.
Me too. Look forward to it. Yeah, there he is, Mickey Gall, the welterweight contender, surging welterweight contender, should we say. That'll be a fun fight. It is a clash of styles, so to speak. Mickey, he's going to come into it with a grappling game plan, I would have thought. Sure. And as we know, Mike Perry's he's always down to throw down with anyone. So that's a good fight. Yeah, looking forward
Perry's
to it.
Perry's super explosive, which, you know, it's scary because I know Mickey personally. He's done Legion of Skanks a bunch. You know, I met Mickey because he was listening to Legion of Skanks podcast. He hit us up being like, oh, we listen to your podcast in the gym all the time. And that's how I met Mickey, which is just such a cool, different, you know, perspective. Most fighters I meet because of this show or whatever.
Who the fuck listens to a podcast while they're training? Because when I'm training, I need some rocky music. I need something with a beat. I do not need to hear the Puerto Rican rattlesnake being very offensive in the background. I'm like, somebody turn this shit off and put Eye of the Tiger on pronto.
But it's like that... Yeah, I'm excited for this fight, but it is a scary, scary fight. He's so explosive. Yeah, Mickey Gall's a nice guy. Really, really good guy. His sister's sweet. Family's very nice. Good people.
No. Solid dude. Really is. So may the best man win there.
Mike, real quick, we got to thank Naked Nutrition, which is so incredible. I mean, with COVID-19 sort of shutting everything down and putting the world on pause for a few months, I'm telling you right now, I've personally gotten out of shape. I know, Bisping, you and your family, you know, Fitness with the Bispings, my new favorite TV show on Instagram. That's great. I am inspired by you. And I said, Bisping, I said to you the other day, I called you up. I was like, what is going on with you? Where are you getting all this energy from? Everyone else is getting fatter during quarantine. And here I'm watching Fitness with the Bispings. What's going on there? You must be using some sort of performance enhancing drugs or something.
Well, listen, whilst we are doing an advertisement for Naked Nutrition, I can't take away from my own discipline, my own self-respect, my own drive, okay? Naked Nutrition is an awesome product, but that doesn't get me out of bed with this lust for life. But I'll tell you what, when I have the Naked Energy, boom, that goes through the roof. I hit the garage like a man possessed. No, trust me, it's the best workout you're ever going to use. Listen, at the end of the day, right, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. So the diet's got to be number one. You got to go out there. You got to walk. You got to get active. You got to put one foot in front of the other. Take the dogs for a walk. Whatever it is, you got to try and stay active. Then you got to have a good diet, okay? And that doesn't just mean having things that are low in carbs, low in fats. You want things that are good for your body. Now, I'm not knocking any of the supplement brands, but when you look at the ingredient list, as we say time and time again, there's a lot of stuff on there you can't even pronounce. Naked Nutrition, right? For example, their whey protein is made from grass-fed cows in California, and that's it. There is one ingredient, grass-fed whey protein. No artificial sweeteners, no GMO, no growth hormone, no soy, no gluten. Basically, no artificial crap going in your body that you don't know what it's going to do to you down the line. And all their products are third-party tested and perfect for fueling workouts and muscle growth. And I really do. It's part of my lifestyle. That's all I use now. I may be getting a little annoying on Instagram going on about it. Yes, I work out, but you know, I like people to know of the quality ingredients that I put inside my body, Lewis. Does that make me a bad person?
It doesn't. And to be honest with you, as I'm getting older, and I have a son now, I constantly am telling him about things to put in his body and to make sure that it's all natural, not to put processed foods in your body. This is why this is the best product line out there. It is all natural. There's a handful of ingredients in all their products. If you go to look at any other supplements, even protein powder, simple protein powders, look at the ingredients list. It sounds like they're from a foreign planet. You don't want that, okay? We're not making this up. We're supposed to say this, obviously. This is a tale as old as time. You want to put natural stuff in your
body. Case in point, Lewis, case in point right here. A lot of people, I would think, if you're smart, for example, now you don't use those artificial sweeteners, right? Because they are found to be cancer causing. What is it? What's the ingredient they have in there? I forget what it is. Aspartame, right? That's in all those.
Aspartame.
I say aspartame, okay? Tomato, tomato, buddy. What do you say?
Aspartame.
Aspartame. Well, I will aspartame this up your ass. No. So now I use stevia, right? Like most of the world, unless you're a psycho. Same thing with stevia. Fuck you, Lewis. I'm swearing on an ad read and I cannot take it. Do not belittle me. Okay. After this, my office, we need to talk. But the whey protein, for example, people are trying to avoid the, what is it? Aspartame?
Aspartame.
People are avoiding the aspartame in the coffee, but they're putting it in their body with the protein. There you go. Just a little example, Lewis, to what I was saying.
No, you're 100% right about that. And once again, here's the thing. You listen to this show, you know, you're like, oh, this is great. We want to get some Naked Nutrition right now, obviously. But don't, just hold on. Just don't do it. Don't do it yet, okay? Because we're going to actually give you a pretty incredible discount as we normally do, okay? Here's the deal. Go to nakednutrition.com. That is NKD.
Nope. Oh, yeah, NKD. Sorry, my bad. Continue.
Hey, look, you're striving for perfection every day of your life.
I'm excited about the deal for the people, Lewis.
I know you are. NakedNutrition.com. That's NKDNutrition.com. NKD for NakedNutrition.com. And when you check out, use that promo code Bisping for 15% off. Sure, I'm only half this show, but Bisping is the promo code, and that's all you need for 15% off.
Not my fault, but it is what it is. When you think Bisping, when you type Bisping, you will save money. That's you just gonna think of my face in
if
the
you type
night.
Gomez, they're gonna charge you double. They're gonna type Gomez.
NKDNutrition.com, code Bisping. All right, UFC 250. Let's go through that real quick. Let's get a quick roundup. Opening fight on the pay-per-view, Sugar Sean O'Malley turning into quite the star. Had an amazing performance. It was a one-punch knockout on Eddie Wineland. Eddie Wineland, you know, he's an old vet. He's been around a while. He's got a lot of fights. He's got a lot of losses, you know. But, you know, that's the opponent that was put in front of him. And he passed the test with flying colors. Took him out. It was a beautiful shot. Put him to sleep.
Walkaway knockout was incredible. Like, really, really cool. Real looks great. It's a walkaway knockout. Just looks great. No matter what way you want to slice it. It's kind of a dick, like, overconfident thing. But it's like,
bang, they go, and you just walk away. If you're a fighter, you need to have one of those in your career. In order to feel complete, you must have one of those.
Oh, well, thank you very much for saying that I'm incomplete.
Do you not have one? I assume you must have had multiple early in your career.
No, Lewis, I don't have a walk-off knockout, okay? All right, call me stupid, but when I put a guy down, I like to make sure the job's done, okay? You might call it overkill, whatever. I'm just not cool. I guess I'm not cool. I'm subpar. If only one day I could be like Sean O'Malley.
You're incomplete. I didn't say you're not cool. You're very cool. You're just a little incomplete. Overall, when you play, did you put that in your book? Was there a chapter about how you never had a walk-away knockout?
Yes, when I had my page of accolades at the back, I also had a page of wants and things I'd never achieved and the dreams that I had but never actually managed to achieve. If only I conceived it better. Now, listen, Sean O'Malley, he's a rising star for sure. He's going to get a good jump up in competition next time, I think. Because he was talking afterwards, hey, listen, great performance. He's talking a big game, as he has to do, right? That's how you get the headlines. That's how you start getting towards the title fight.
He's the best striker in MMA.
Well, he also said that Henry Cejudo retired because of him as well. Again, you know, it's like, I get it. He's saying the right things. He's saying, and maybe go out there and smoke Cejudo. You know, so he is saying the right things, but he's yet to fight somebody inside the top 15. I'm assuming next time it's going to be a big showcase for him. I certainly think he's probably, you know, he's going to be co-main event or main event in his next fight. It could certainly be a main event on a, on a fight night. Mm. Big things ahead for Mickey Gall. I mean, that was beautiful. Seems to have the whole package. He's cool. He's composed. You know, he's very, very good. So, congrats, Mickey. Keep saying Mickey Gall. Sean O'Malley, well done.
Well, it's funny because Sean O'Malley is an example of a fighter, for whatever reason. Maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe you can correct me on this. It feels like the UFC wants to push him, whatever it is. There's an it factor about him, even for a few years now. I know he got suspended for a while and it was unjust, I believe. Sometimes you see there's a target on them and they go, yeah, they want that guy to be a fucking star. They recognize something in him. Just because sort of the way that they talk about him and also being undefeated, he's a good looking guy. He has that sort of crazy look and the crazy style as well.
Well, he's the white Takeshi 6'9", isn't he? Jesus, yeah. Louises. Have you seen all the tats all over the face? I don't know if I buy it. He's got the hair. I don't mean buy it. I mean, don't know if I like it, you know, but whatever. I just feel that one day he's going to wish that he didn't have those tattoos on his face. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in the future, everyone will have tattoos on the face. I don't know.
I want a neck tattoo so badly. I have always wanted one.
Oh, trash. Explain. I've always wanted
one. I said to myself, I was like, I'll get a neck tattoo when I know I'll never need a day job. And I'll never need a day job again. I'll never work, you know, that traditional. I hope so anyway.
Never say never, Lewis. Never say never.
Now I don't know what to get tattooed on my neck.
Let's get like a sixth scorpion. So badass.
Yeah.
Like a guy, an old jiu-jitsu coach of mine who's a piece of shit. He got like lips on his neck, as if you know, I was like, oh god, that's not good. I just feel like if you get a tattoo on your neck, on your face, you don't want it. I mean, listen, a lot of people have them, so I can't say anything, you know, but I just feel that if you're going for a job interview and you walk in, you've got tattoos all over your face. Now, as you said, you're never going to need to, you know. I mean, listen, you've made it. You've got a team of assistants. You've got sycophants everywhere. You've got Gas Digital Studios, which has reopened, but you decided to stay at home. Whatever. You know, read into that what you will. Some might say you're lazy. Some people should say you should be there at the Gas Digital Studios, rounding up the troops. Rounding up the troops and saying, guys, we are back with a vengeance. But no, Lewis is just doing it from home. Okay. Yeah. Get your face tat. Do whatever you want. I don't care anymore. The next fight after Sean O'Malley, we had another 135er. They're in the same weight class, right? O'Malley's a 135, bantamweight, I believe. Yeah. So we had Aljamain Sterling. He went out there. Who did he fight? Not Cody Stamann.
Corey Sanhagen.
Oh, Sanhagen. Pardon me. Sanhagen, Stamann, you know. Pretty close. That was a dominant performance. Took him down real fast, choked him out. And that's funny because O'Malley's talking about, oh, I'm going to beat Cejudo. I'm sure Sterling has something to say because Sterling's got to be so close to a title shot.
And then also the same fight card, fucking Garbrandt as well, came back and starched his opponent. So 135 right now
is just starting to look really interesting, really exciting. For the first time, honestly, with Cejudo, maybe the best thing for the division is Cejudo retiring, because all of these guys are fucking killers.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Garbrandt. I mean, I just want to say well done to Aljamain Sterling. We kind of skimmed over that.
Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah,
No,
awesome.
You're fine. Your point stands. But I just don't want to disrespect his performance. He went out, I think it was 88 seconds. I mean, got the fucking job done. A lot of people thought Sandhagen was going to give him a tough time, and he took him out of there in style. Yeah. Certainly delivered a message that he's worthy of a title shot. But as you say, to your point, just pull my headphones out. As you say, to your point, I mean, let's just talk about Cody Garbrandt real quick. That knockout, oh my God. Cody Garbrandt always went forward. He was a fighter's fighter. He was always going forward, getting into wars. And he paid the price. He got knocked out 3 times in a row. The punching power has always been there, but he just needed to have a slightly smarter fight IQ, or not necessarily a fight IQ, just a more mature approach to the fight game. That's what he did on Saturday night. And that knockout, he was looking for it, just dipping down, and then he comes up, whoom. I mean, fucking hell.
It was
what
so,
a like, shot.
You don't even have to know anything about fighting, but you can see the way that he rotated his body, like bent down and fucking, like he was throwing a baseball. It was fucking cool, really. And also, walkaway knockout. Very complete fighter. Cody Garbrandt can retire tomorrow, have no qualms with his career. He's got that walkaway knockout now.
He's got that walkaway knockout. He's got the neck tattoos as well. Do you know what I mean? Here's me over here. No walkaway knockout, no neck tattoos, one eyeball. I have got a lot of work to do. I'm calling Dana Monday morning. I'm back, baby boy.
Cody Garbrandt is the ultimate male. He's got a walkaway knockout, neck tattoo. What are we doing with our lives on this little shitty podcast? We need Cody Garbrandt's life.
I apologize. I will try better. Now, that knockout was unbelievable because awesome. Sun Tzu, it spun him around, and then he did a face plant on the octagon. So some insane punch power there. And you know, Garbrandt, after the fight, he was saying, look, listen, you know, if Cejudo's gone, then let's all the fighters, all the guys, you know, maybe I know O'Malley in there. Obviously, we've got Aljamain Sterling. Who else are the top contenders? Piotr Jan. Aldo. Yeah, so he said, all of those guys, let's fly to Fight Island. We'll all stay there and we'll do like a tournament, like the old-fashioned UFC days. I mean, I was like, that sounds pretty cool. I don't know if you could do it, you know, with the commission and things like that, but I like the way he's thinking.
They did that recently. I mean, when I say recently, maybe 6-7 years ago. I don't even remember the organization.
The one for the featherweight. The featherweight division did it.
No. Not even in the UFC. This is outside of the UFC. They actually did a one-night tournament where guys fought more than once in a night. And it was like in modern MMA times, which was pretty cool. Like, you know, look, all the fighters, they make a decision to get in the cage. So if 4 guys decide or 8 guys decide that they want to all fight in one night, yes, it is not the smartest thing for the sport. But I'll tell you right now, as a fan, oh my God, imagine that. You can watch like those guys, you win a fight, you have to fight again, like the old school UFC.
Yeah. But you wouldn't have to do that. I think what he's saying is go to Fight Island. They're going to be there for a number of weeks. He said, let's fly to Fight Island. All the contenders at bantamweight, they would have to, it would have to be 4 or it would have to be 8. I'd say go with the top 4 and have a mini tournament, right? And I think they're going to do a number of events in close proximity, maybe over the space of 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. You know, on the first fight night, the 4 guys or the 8 guys, call it 4. All right. So let's say the top 4, who would it be? Piotr Jan, Harrington, I'm going to need some assistance here. I haven't got my bantamweight hat on right now. Piotr Jan, Cody Garbrandt, Aljamain Sterling, and who would be the 4th? I don't Piotr think Jan, O'Malley.
He's booked a fight right now, right? Who's Jan fighting?
Jose Aldo.
Yeah, those two are already booked to fight. So I almost feel like the winner of those two should be picked for this quote-unquote hypothetical tournament, right?
Well, they're fighting for the title anyway. So, okay, so whoever wins that, they're fighting for the belt. And then we have a mini tournament to find the next contender, baby. And they just fight on the first event on Fight Island. And then 2 weeks later, the other 2 guys fight. Boom, there you go. You got a winner.
I didn't know that Jan versus Aldo was officially for the title.
I believe so. Harrington, fact check, please. Is that correct? I believe it is.
Yeah. In the post-fight presser, they actually asked Dana if Aljo had done enough to leapfrog either one of those fighters into the title fight. Dana said, no, that fight's already been locked up. It is for the vacant 135-pound title.
I mean, Aljo versus Garbrandt is obviously the fight to make for a number one contender. You know, Sean O'Malley, great, more power to him. He still hasn't fought a top 15 opponent. You can't really put him in title contention. He just sort of, when you have a knockout like that and, you know, fight of the night, or I'm sorry, performance of the night, I believe he got one of the bonuses. You know, it's just like, let's slow our roll a little bit. Somebody like Aljo has been in the game for years. These guys have all paid their dues and been there before. So I think the fight to make very obvious, and what a fucking exciting fight, Cody Garbrandt versus Aljamain Sterling. I mean, holy shit. Those guys are both just absolute monsters. And yeah, I think that probably makes the most sense. Sugar Sean.
And it sucks for both of those guys. See, this is what I was saying before, right? When you're a big star like a McGregor or like a Cejudo, and you want to go up or down a weight class and you skip the pack, right? And then you just fight for the belt and then you win. They go, oh my God, he's a two-weight division champion. I'm not taking away from anybody that's done that. It's a massive achievement. What I'm saying is you haven't got to fight through the contenders because as you just said, look at that. Cody Garbrandt versus Aljamain Sterling. Both of those guys are fucking top tier level, right? And whoever wins that fight is going to fight for the belt, I would assume. If they would, we're saying hypothetically they're going to fight each other. One of them has to lose. If they fight each other, one of them has to lose. That's what I'm saying. That's how fucking hard it is to fight your way up to fight for the belt.
According to Dana, Aljamain Sterling is a number one contender and is going to get a title fight, the winner of Aldo versus Peter Yan. But you know what? I just, for the sake of being a fan, I mean, why not Garbrandt versus Aljo? What an incredible fight for the fans. I mean, holy shit, just two super explosive guys. But yeah, if Aljo's already there, I don't even want to suggest taking away his number one contendership because I love Aljamain Sterling. I love Matt Serra, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, and he fights under Matt Serra. So congratulations to Matt Serra. If you want to smile, go look at Matt Serra's Instagram of him reacting to Aljamain Sterling's win.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that.
The fucking love that guy has for that guy. It just feels good. It was a nice little moment to watch.
You know what? That entire team, Ray Longo, Matt Serra, and all the fighters, they got a real cool thing. They got a real close bond and connection, so that's awesome. And yeah, you're right. If I'm Aljamain Sterling now and Dana confirmed he's the number one contender, then sit tight. Sit tight, because that's when I say number one contender, meaning he's next for the belt. Sit tight, because one wrong fight, one wrong move, you dipped when you should have bobbed, you bobbed when you should have weaved, whatever it is, and it all goes wrong. And that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, possibly. You know, you might get a chance to fight for the belt. You win the belt. You become famous. And more than that, your legacy. You became the champion of the world. And that's very hard to come by. So, yeah, Aljamain Sterling, congratulations once again. And, yeah, sit tight and wait for that title fight. Let's get to the main event, though. Amanda Nunes, Felicia Spencer, Ariel Helwani. Pardon me?
Was that it of the fights? Was there one more?
Neil Magny versus Anthony Rocco Martin.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, and I was right again. I said Neil Magny would beat Rocco Martin. I said Sean O'Malley was going to win. I said Cody Garbrandt was going to win. I said Amanda Nunes was going to win. I don't know if you're seeing a pattern here. Did we go 5-5 on the main card?
Yeah, you guys nailed it. If anybody had taken that parlay, they'd be very, very happy with you.
Hold on. Who nailed it? Who nailed it? Lewis nailed it?
Well, I'm pretty sure you picked first every time, and then Lewis just agreed with you.
I did agree every time.
Because you might. So, hey, Harrington, if you could just like cross engineer or reverse engineer or just go back in a time machine, can you imagine if we put $1,000 on that, how much would we have won on a parlay?
Because
we
got them all
right.
Main card.
Talking of which, though, while Harrington possibly does that, Saturday night, it was on the UFC broadcast, I think, or they were talking about it. Somebody put $1 million on Amanda Nunes to win $166,000 because she was such a massive favorite. I mean, what do you think of that? $1 million to win $166,000.
It's a great bet. She fucking dominated. I mean, it was maybe one of the most one-sided fights, title fights we've ever seen, with the exception of people getting starched or knocked out very quickly. But it's even more impressive, or I should say less impressive, for Felicia Spencer because she just got her ass kicked from bell to bell. I don't think there was a second of that fight where she had, you know, any shot. But yeah, it makes sense. Like, if I had $1 million to lose, you got to be willing to lose the money. It's just guaranteed. It's like guaranteed money in the bank. Why wouldn't you want $170,000, Bisping, just sitting right there?
Oh, listen, yes. You got to speculate to accumulate and all that good stuff. But still, $1 million. Upsets happen. Upsets do happen. And Ariel Helwani, in fact, on that note, he was tweeting out Saturday night. He was talking about how Felicia Spencer, and of course, they're both Canadian, so maybe a bit of a patriotic loyalty there and fair play. He's like, yeah, no, Steve-O from Jackass tweeted. I was just talking to Ariel Helwani. He says, Felicia Spencer is going to, big an upset, and she's going to be the new champion. And I said, no fucking chance. Right. And then Al Helwani came out, and he's like, what, Mike? Oh, remember like you did? And I never tweeted him. I was like, don't put my body of work in the same category as Felicia Spencer. No disrespect to Felicia, okay? But I was grinding away for fucking years. She's had two wins in the UFC. Get fucked, Helwani. And sure enough, I was correct.
Yeah. Yeah, it was it's pretty one-sided. And what do you do now? Really, you know, good for Felicia Spencer. You know, hopefully she makes her way back. But Amanda Nunes is just basically unbeatable. I don't even know what you do. It's a similar situation with Cyborg. Remember for a while, Cyborg just looked completely unbeatable. And it was like she's so dominant that it's weirdly, this is going to sound bad, but correct me if I'm wrong, but weirdly bad for her division. It's weirdly because it's just, there doesn't seem to be any excitement or anybody on the horizon that could even come close to challenging her.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, no offense, Felicia. I was only joking before. In case she watches that, she's like, what? You know, she's a very, very sweet girl, and she deserves props for going five rounds with Amanda Nunes. Nunes has taken out, you know, quality opponents. Look what she did to Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, Cyborg. You know what I mean? So, yeah, fair play. Felicia deserves respect. But to your point, yeah. I mean, she's saying she's cleared out the division. The commentators were talking about maybe Valentina Shevchenko. Dana shot that down pretty quick. And, you know, rightly so, I would say, you know, they've made that fight twice, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was twice. And Nunes, you know, soundly beat her both times. Shevchenko is the closest person, I would say, on the planet that could challenge her. There is Megan Anderson. She was tweeting out there at the weekend saying, hold on, what about me? But again, you know, I mean, Megan Anderson, big, tall girl, good skills, but you'd have to majorly favor Nunes, and that's no disrespect. Nunes, as you say, I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing for her, though, but she is just that good. It's insane. I mean, she's a huge lady, massive 145, but she can make 135 pretty comfortable. Her knock was always that she needed the stamina. There was a bit of an issue with the stamina, but she can go five rounds now. No problem. In fact, her last fight was five rounds against Duranda May, and this fight was five rounds. That'll actually be very beneficial for her career, you know, so she's only getting better. And, of course, well, everything else is there. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, for Amanda Nunes now, there's not a lot she could do. I would like to see a crossover fight, and I think there was a little tease of this with her and Clarissa Shields, the professional boxer. Clarissa Shields versus Amanda Nunes in another McGregor Mayweather style crossover fight. I mean, that'd be pretty interesting, because the problem is for Nunes now, she is so dominant that you've got to start thinking outside of the box. You know, maybe I'm out of my mind. Far be it from me to tell Dana what to do in promoting. He knows that business inside and out. He's the best promoter that there's ever been. I don't know, but maybe, I don't know, you start to run out of options because Amanda Nunes just takes everybody out of there. I mean, but that does build a following, because look at McGregor in the early days, look at Ronda Rousey, what she was doing, look at Mike Tyson back in the day, because it just creates this myth, you know what I mean, this like aura that, wow, this woman is inhuman, this woman is truly unbeatable. So people will tune in, I think, no matter what, to see Amanda Nunes. I think her star is rising all the time.
It's not so much the problem that, like, yeah, it's not even a problem for Amanda. Her star is rising without a doubt, unquestionably. Just for the 145 pounds and 135 pound female divisions, there's not a clear cut contender. I believe that the 135 pound number one contender is Jermaine Durandamé, who her last loss was against Amanda Nunes at 145 pounds. Amanda Nunes has truly, when people talk about clearing out divisions, no. She has cleared out two divisions. There's nobody there to fight.
I'm the champion at 125 twice. Yes. you know what I'm saying? So she's cleared out three
in a weird way,
divisions.
You know, and I know I guess her wife is pregnant right now. She's taking a year off.
And rightly
That's
so.
Probably the best thing. I'm sorry?
No, I'm just saying, and rightly so. Good for her. She's earned a break. She's earned some time to be with her wife and for them to, you know, cherish that moment, that occasion, take some downtime, forget about fighting for a little while. Yeah, good for her. I'm proud.
Congratulations. She's got a kid on the way. That's a beautiful, it's the best thing in the fucking world, guys.
No, it really is. I'm just going to say it is 2:38 my time. So unfortunately, this little soiree, this episode, this back and forth, this conflab, conversation, podcast, whatever you want to call it, it's over.
It's over.
That's it. I'm done.
We try.
I got to go. I got a heart condition, baby boy. I got to go I'll get it
plugs.
Looked at.
You go. I'll do the plugs at the end. Thank you very much, Bisping. You're the fucking man. If you guys love the show, please go to our YouTube right now. Subscribe on YouTube. You get a little notification every time we have a new show going live. iTunes, Google Play, anywhere you can subscribe for a podcast. Very simple. We have new episodes that are coming out usually twice a week, most of the time twice per week. And if you guys want access to the entire on-demand library, every episode of the Believe You Me podcast, and I should say, because I saw somebody ask this recently, I replied to them on YouTube, ad-free. You do not have to listen to ads. You do not have to, it's uncensored, ad-free, pre-release. We got fucking the entire on-demand library, every episode of Believe You Me that we've done since the beginning, because you only get the latest 30 on iTunes and YouTube, but the entire on-demand library is available, gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. You get a 14-day free trial. You can go binge-watch all the podcasts, including my other podcasts, Legion of Skanks and Real Ass Podcast. Also, just real quick, live, I'll be June 25th, one night only. Phoenix, Arizona. If you guys are in Phoenix, tickets are going fast, so make sure you grab myself and Kurt Metzger. Just one night, just getting back into the swing of things. So if you guys are in that area, come hang out with us June 25th, Thursday night. All right, that's it. Believe in Me podcast. We're out.